Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, June the 17th, 2020. It's 4 p.m. New York time. And wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I was just telling you, Cindy, before the show that I have a new process that I started today. And I can't say I pioneered it. I based it on our guest from yesterday. We had Dr. Ann Jensen on, a friend of Dan Mangana's, and she was telling us about her pure emotion approach to clearing old tapes, which is a really fascinating thing. And so I kind of took it and twisted it around, because she was talking about getting rid of anger and all that kind of stuff from the past. I said, well, if you can use her technique, which is to get really, really, really angry about this thing that happened in the past and just, you know, overextend it and make it huge, huge for the purpose of releasing it. I wonder what happens if you do the same thing with a really good feeling emotion. So I woke up this morning and decided to give it a try and see what would happen. And I got in front of my mirror for my mirror exercise. And then I got to this thing I was going to do. And at first I was a little bit stumped, like, okay, so what do I focus on? And then I just kind of picked like three or four different things that I'd like to attract in my life and things that would be really great to have happen. I said, okay, so went with the first one and really, really got excited about it. I was like jumping up and down and throwing my arms up. It lasted about 10 seconds. And then, okay, I got to do the next one. You know, so I grabbed the next one and went with that one and got another 10 seconds out of it. I was going to do it, trying to do it for a full minute, 4 seconds, the Abraham Hicks thing, right? You do 64 seconds, you get, you know, the effect of the thing actually starting to manifest. Let me tell you, that's a long time to get really, really excited about something. It was amazingly long. But the great news was when I was done, first I was exhausted, but it was a different kind of exhaustion. It was like the kind of exhaustion you get, after you've heard a really funny comedian and you've been, you know, rolling on the aisles because your stomach hurts so much from laughing so much. Or it was the kind of exhaustion you get if you're a skier and you just, you know, ran down a thrilling trail or something like that. It was that kind of exhaustion. And it was good. But what was even more amazing, I was vibrating at a really high rate, very, very high rate. I was amazed how quickly that 1 minute of intense high joy, you know, just reaching for the high joy got me to that high vibe. And it stayed for about 15 to 20 minutes. Without me doing anything, I was just kind of sitting there in the glow of it, like, holy wow, like my body was vibrating. And I also found that because I had sustained that much high intensity, high vibration, it was pretty easy to keep it going throughout the day. All I had to do was give it a little bit of a feeder every, you know, 30 minutes or so, and it would be pushed right back up again. So day one has been an interesting experience.
So I'm curious, when you decided to do this, what led you to pick excitement as the thing that you wanted to, you know, blow up and make bigger?
Actually, I wasn't thinking excitement.
Oh, okay.
What I was thinking was just high vibe. Anything that I could do to get to a high vibration place. I didn't care if I, you know, experienced it as love or clarity or exhilaration or whatever. I didn't really care what it was. I just wanted to get to high vibe and see what would happen.
Got it. Okay.
And it came out as excitement.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And in fact, I think, well, I know why it came out as excitement, because part of the way I did it was just like I showed you. I threw my arms in the air and I was going, yeah, all right, getting really excited, you know, because that was the quickest way I could think of to get there.
Well, it's funny. I'm thinking about, I'm actually looking this up really quickly. One of my favorite astrologers, actually, but she's also a political activist, or just an activist in a lot of different ways. She has a list of, her name's Caroline Casey, and she has a list of principles. Mm-hmm. And there's one principle, you know, whenever you read a list of things, or at least whenever I've read a list of principles or ideas that someone has, you know, some of them are like, oh, that's just really resonate and I understand it right off the bat. And then, you know, there's always one or two that I'm like, oh, either I'm not quite sure what they're saying or I don't know if I agree with it or whatever. But one of her ideas is, if something is a problem, make it bigger.
Well, you've mentioned that.
And, you know, this is the first thing I thought of when you were talking about the idea of making something bigger. And Like in your situation, what you talked about wasn't really a problem. It's just, I really want to manifest these things and I want to get excited. I want to pump it up. I want to get, you know, right? High vibe. I want to really pump up this high vibe. Exactly. You were talking about her, yesterday, your guest yesterday, talking about anger. And, you know, the only reason why someone would want to, you know, process it or get rid of it or transmute it would be, it's a, feels like a problem, right? It's like, I want to, so it, that's what it reminded me of. It's like making it bigger.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of got me to thinking about that, is that so many times these emotions that we have, that we have labeled as bad or wrong or problematic, they really do become a problem because we don't let them get big enough. You know, we kind of smoosh them down and ignore them and not have much to do with them. And so I thought that was really profound, to just let it be as big as it needs to be, because then at that point, you know, it's grown into something that it's processed itself, sort of, right? It's like it's,
well, yeah.
It, instead of being ignored, you know, it finally gets to have a life of its own. Now, of course, I realize we don't want things to have a life of their own where they, you know, will end up having some kind of inappropriate display of anger or whatever. But I think that's really brilliant, to just let it get as big as it can get. And then that you turned this on its head, sort of, and decided, well, what if I do that with an emotion that feels
really bad? I figured if it works with what we call the negative emotions, it should work with what we call the positive emotions. It should be just as effective either direction, I would think, you know?
Well, the thing I love about it, you said when I got up to do my mirror work, and I've been thinking so much for the past year or two, we've talked a lot about mirror work, and I've given clients, you know, assignments of doing mirror work. I've done mirror work myself. And thinking about the mirror neurons.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why mirror work works.
Right, exactly.
Because our brain starts to relate to whatever it is we're saying.
Yes.
It's the empathy that is built into us as human beings that we show to other people. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like that little saying that, you know, if we treated our friends the way we treat ourselves, we'd all be in jail.
Yeah, right.
Like we generally sometimes treat others in a way that we don't give ourselves that same level of love and compassion. And so the mirror neurons help us do that. And mirror work does the same exact thing with our brain by looking into a mirror. So I love this idea of, and 1 minute, you know, that's so short. I mean, it didn't feel short when you were trying to keep going.
No, it felt exhausting. I mean, if I'd gone for 5 minutes, I probably would have been on the floor gasping for breath. But
yeah. So I see that. That's really interesting. I know with emotions that don't feel like they're going to be so comfortable, like sadness or, you know, anger, a lot of people are afraid to feel them because it feels uncertain and they don't know what's going to happen. But usually if we'll let ourselves feel them in their fullness, it's not as bad as we think it's going to be, and they dissipate. They dissipate rather quickly if we will give them that space to exist.
Which is the point, right? To let them get out so that they don't haunt us anymore, so that we don't focus there anymore.
Yeah. I was listening to something today. I am not an expert here. I do not, I know like 30 seconds worth of information about it because that's what I listen to. But it was that they are in psychology using MDMA, which is the active ingredient, I guess, in the club drug ecstasy. They're using it to deal with post-traumatic stress, especially in like combat veterans that come back and want to commit suicide because they're so troubled because they cannot get these pictures out of their mind, because they cannot get these experiences they've had to settle down, and they go through life on the edge of a panic attack all the time. And the reason why this works, I think, the one little clip I heard anyway that was very interesting, because they're saying that one or two sessions, the one man said it was like doing 15 years worth of therapy in one night.
Wow.
But it's because it has some kind of effect on the amygdala, which is the part of our brain that freaks out and gets scared, right? It unhooks that from the experience, is what I understood the interview to say, to the degree that these people that are suffering with this can talk about their past experience without getting triggered at all. It's like they're telling you something they read in a book, right? Because suddenly it's not connected to that part of their brain anymore. And afterwards, that it seems that this new experience of being able to process all of this without any triggering is still there. And yeah. People that have had one of these sessions or, you know, a month's worth of to process a year later are still not having any PTSD. And I thought it was like, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all our brain. Our brain is like amazing. And if we can just figure out, you know, like this, you've got a new process and it works. So processes.
It's especially poignant because last Friday we had a return guest. This is a client actually of Linda Armstrong's. He's a former military guy. His name is Harold Peck, Chief Harold Peck. And he's a great guy. He's a really interesting guy. Because he is completely salt of the earth type communicator. So he mixes in four letter words and, you know, everything is the way you'd expect a military guy who's just, you know, a plain military guy to talk. And he talks about the stuff that we talk about here because he used to be a doubter of it. And then he had a couple of near-death experiences that really transformed him. So now he spends a lot of time talking about what he calls hippie shit. And he's fabulous. He's wonderful. He's actually about to embark on a 500-mile walk across Colorado. And part of his goal is for himself just to get out there. And part of it is to raise awareness for among the public about veterans who have PTSD.
Oh, wow.
So I'm wondering if he's aware of the study that you're talking about.
Well, the person to go to is because the reason I knew about it is because I'm on Tim Ferriss's mailing list.
Okay.
And so Tim Ferriss wrote a book. His first book, I think, that was really popular was The 4-Hour Work Week.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wrote a book. I can't think of the title of it. It has the word Titans in the title. I have many of his books. And he is the one that's he's one of the people that's sort of spearheading this and really pushing for it to be a thing because there's lots of research that's been being done for the past decade. And so he mentioned it in detail in an email that he sent out this week. And there was a link to a video and I watched, like I said, I watched about 30 seconds of it and then something happened and I had to leave it. It's probably paused on one of these tabs on my computer. But yeah, I mean, I just think some of the work that they're doing with plant medicine and with different chemical compounds is really amazing. And, you know, I know that a lot of people get shy away from it because of the drug culture and the party culture that's connected to certain things. But when you think about it, we really are sort of just a bag of chemicals, right?
True.
Everything that happens that we experience is all just some kind of chemical process. So it's like, okay, let's just see, you know, what can happen. But they're getting results that are amazing. And to think of someone suffering for decades with PTSD, where literally I heard the one man who was a combat veteran said something like, it really struck me. He said something like, you know, we knew that we were willing to give our life for our country, but it turned out it wasn't just in Iraq. It wasn't just in Afghanistan.
Right.
It was the rest of our life, every day of our life, even after we were home, because our lives are so, you know, messed up from what we've gone through and we've given our whole life. Like we can't even have a normal life. We thought, oh my gosh, that's just heartbreaking. So I don't know. It was really cool. So maybe
I'm going to pass it along to him. Excuse me.
Maybe he's listening. I think this is the gentleman that gave us a comment that
it's him. Yeah. It's the same one. Yeah. And he does listen to some of our episodes. So he could be listening to this. I know that he, would tend to advocate the more energetic approach, the non-drug approach, just because that's what he has done with Linda's help and made a lot of progress. And that's what actually has turned him into an advocate. He sees himself as a person who can explain to other military guys how all this stuff, this hippie shit stuff really works.
And that they will listen to him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's one of their own. Yeah. That's great. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah.
But still, I mean, knowledge is power. So I'll pass it along and maybe he can get some good out of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So look at there's two good things that came out of a one first day, first try experience, an experiment with trying to really push a high vibe experience. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it also carried over to the rest of my day. As listeners have probably gotten tired of me talking about by now, the app that's almost done. I was working on the app that was almost done today. And that setup that I did this morning, I call it a setup deliberately, literally set me up to maintain a much higher level of concentration than I've been able to achieve in months.
Now, can I say that's the thing? Because you talked about this with me before we came on the air today.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that really got my attention.
Yeah.
Not just that, oh, wow, you know, I really was able to pump up the good vibes and I felt all this great energy and I was just really buzzing. But when you said it seemed to be able to affect my concentration and my focus.
Yes.
To a great deal. Like the rest of the morning when I was working, I thought, okay, now I'm really interested. Because
not just the rest of the morning, up until the point 15 minutes before the show where we were
starting. Okay, so pretty much the whole day.
Yeah.
After 4 o'clock for you. So that's
exactly
pretty much the end of my work day.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what has happened. And I'm still feeling it. I mean, when earlier in the show where I did the demonstration, I threw my arms up in the air. That just relifted. It's like the whole thing came back. It's
so
like
you moved your body and you employed a little kinetic energy there and it like reactivated.
Yeah. All those endorphins that had been stirred around this morning are still swimming around apparently, and all they need is just a little bit of a nudge and they just activate again.
So tell me this, was there any, did you use any kind of words, any verbal affirmations, any statements?
No.
or were you just thinking about the success of whatever? I mean, how are you doing this besides moving your body around? And
Well, the office that I use is basically a second bedroom in our apartment. And it's on the other end of the apartment, but it's not a real big apartment. I mean, we're talking, you know, 900 square feet. We're not talking about a huge apartment here.
Okay.
So while it's separated, I mean, it's close enough to our bedroom that I could be waking Louise up, because this was pretty early in the morning. This was
okay,
like 5:30 a.m. and I didn't want to wake her up.
You
know? So I was doing it silently. So I was doing the thing and I was, I was like really, really soft, but I was pretending I was shouting.
Okay. All right. All these details are helpful, you know, because when you go to put a new process into application, it's helpful to understand it all. So,
and yep. I mean, after one day, this is not something I've read about anywhere. It's not something I've studied anywhere. So I'm kind of making it up as I go along, which means anyone who is listening, who decides to try it, send me your details too, because I'm still learning how to make this thing work. You know, all I know is I got this really interesting result on day one. Beyond that, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Yeah. Well, and you incorporated it into your mirror work, right? Which was already a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this before. That is one of my best friends, Jackie Gates. Something she taught me was habits, the idea of habit stacking, which is when you're wanting to develop a new habit, to stack it on top of another habit that you're already, it's already an actual habit that you do every day without fail. It's just a habit. You do it to connect it somehow to that habit. And that way it's easier for you to just begin doing it all the time. So
all
I love that you connected it to the mirror work.
And I did do it intentionally. That's the best part. It was just, that's what I did this morning. That was the whole thing. There was no plan. It was just get up and do it and see what happens. And it's an experiment. I think probably the closest thing I had to a plan was, I didn't know how, but somehow, as fast as possible, I was going to reach that high vibe state. I was just going to do whatever it took. I was going to throw my arms in the air. I was going to pretend like I was shouting to the moon. I was going to do whatever it took to get there. And I got there really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Really quickly. I mean, we've talked often about how it can take quite some time to climb that emotional guidance scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I've been living in the lower end of it lately. I have not been. I've been living in the higher end. But still,
that's important to know.
It is, yes. Yeah. It probably would have been a much bigger challenge for me if I had been starting at that lower vibe level. And I would have also not expected myself to, you know, reach that highest level. It would have been more like, I wonder how far up the scale I can climb.
Well, and plus, if you were at that very low vibe level, you could have used her technique for making that lower vibe bigger enough to
Absolutely.
Burst the bubble of it, so to speak. So they
right, yeah.
Start moving up the scale.
I suspect that it's probably two ways of doing the same thing, really, when it comes down to it.
It's just like a magnifier.
Yeah. It's a good word for it. It's a magnifier. Yeah.
I like it.
Now, of course, Wednesdays are Relationship Wednesdays, and magnifiers, when you say that word, I instantly think, okay, that ties into relationships. How are we going to tie that one in? And I'm thinking there ought to be a way to tie this little daily process into relationships as well. So what's the first thought that comes to your mind about that?
The first thought that comes to my mind is that so often the reason why we suppress certain emotions is not only because we don't want to feel them or we're afraid of them, but because we're doing some people pleasing for other people around us.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't want to have a difficult conversation, or we don't want to admit that we're feeling a certain way because, hey, that might make so-and-so feel bad. Somebody I'm in a relationship with might feel worse, or they might have a reaction or a response to it. And so, but in doing that, we, you know, you said a minute ago, knowledge is power. And I have been teaching for the past 2 weeks. I've been doing videos about personal power. And that's one of the things I actually did a video yesterday about knowledge is power.
Well, no kidding.
And the idea of if anybody that's ever taken a class with me, one of the first things I will say is I want you to come into this class and I want you to immediately ditch two ideas that are at the opposite ends of ideas that may come into your mind about learning. And the first one is, oh, I already know this. And sometimes it's not even that we're being arrogant.
No. Right?
We just may say, oh, like I've actually been disappointed at the beginning of a class because, you know, 30 minutes in, I realize I've learned nothing new. And I start to think, oh, this is all stuff I already know. And I will tell you what, that attitude, that idea will block you from learning anything new. Because you've just told your subconscious, no need to pay attention, no need to be aware of something that has the potential to be looked at a different way. You already know this stuff. The other idea is at the other end of the spectrum, and it is, oh, this is too hard. Like, I'll never be able to. And if we will get rid of both of those ideas, then we open ourselves to gain more knowledge. And sure. When we do that, I mean, knowledge is power, right? So that's important to our own sense of personal power. And so is the ability to express these emotions that we're talking about in a way where we stay in our power. And so this is more language tweaks that I talk about all the time, but one of them is, and in relationships specifically, where people say, you made me upset.
Yeah.
You make me mad. You made me feel bad about myself. You made me, you made me. And when we do that, we're automatically putting ourselves down at the bottom of that emotional scale into victim energy mode that says, you have control over how I feel. Mm-hmm. And that's not a very powerful place to be. And it can be with events too, right? Like right now, right? For the past few years, many of us have looked at the news. My husband said, how many times a day do I look at the news and say, oh my God, right? And he said, he's got his oh my God meter on me because I say it so much. Oh my God, or holy something, right?
Right.
So, but the deal is that I can, when I express how I'm feeling about something, or we can all do this, it's a great thing to learn, is to say, oh, when I see that, I feel so angry. Instead of that makes me angry.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle, but one of those statements is saying, I have certain values, and when I see this happening, or I hear about this, my response is that I feel angry.
Mm-hmm.
The other statement is saying that this external event has the power to decide my feelings for me.
Yes.
And so when we, you know, our words are so powerful. And what about the other way we express? Sometimes we say, I am angry. I am sad. I am frustrated. And I know that I do this, right? But I'm working on changing that up to where I say, I feel angry. I feel frustrated. I feel sad. Why? What's the big deal? What's the big difference? Well, the big difference is that I am statements are really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I am more than a single emotion.
Absolutely.
I am more than anger, right? I am multifaceted. I am a complex human being like we all are. And I can't define myself with one emotion that's out there. Do I feel angry sometimes? Sure. Do I feel happy? Do I feel sad? Do I feel frustrated? Do I feel excited? Do I feel elated? Yes, I feel all of those things. But to say I am something, I've just squished myself into this narrow definition. And so these might sound like just semantics, but they're actually really powerful tools that we can use is to train ourselves to say, I feel a certain way instead of you make me this or I am this. And in relationship, here's why this is so important. One of my favorite quotes, it's Benjamin Disraeli said, never apologize for emotion because when you do, you're apologizing for the truth. And in order for us to have relationships that are real, we have to be real. And so to be able to say, I feel a certain way when this happens, it's very, very important to a relationship to have for the relationship to be built on honesty. And I don't mean that we lie to each other, but we do. We lie all the time when we say everything's okay and we really don't feel like it's okay.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And so if we would just speak our own truth and be okay with that and also be okay with our partners and our friends speaking their truth to us, if we can keep it about ourselves and not point fingers, that helps a lot.
You know how moms of large families, if they're trying to call one of the kids and they can't remember that kid's name because there's so many of them, they run through the list. So it's Tommy, Sandy, Jody, you know, they'll just run through the whole thing trying to find the name, right? That's right. The way it feels for me when I recognize that I'm doing what you're talking about. And so I start off with, he makes me think, no, I think, you know, it's like a stutter, stutter, stutter until I finally get to I feel.
But you know what? I just said this in a video I made. I said, when you start this, you will catch yourself. Mm-hmm. You'll say, oh, that makes me so mad. And 10 minutes later, you'll realize, oh, and then pretty soon it'll be like a minute later. And pretty soon you'll be in the middle of saying it and you catch yourself, like you just said.
Right.
That's always progress when we catch ourselves in the middle of something. Because at one time we didn't notice we were doing it at all.
That's right. Yeah.
And so when we start noticing after the fact and then in the middle of it, and then we'll start catching ourselves right before, it's like, I feel, we just catch ourselves. So it's important to be able to express your emotions, especially if you're in a relationship or a friendship and you can't express your emotions. If you know how to express them appropriately, and sometimes it's just saying them, like I feel angry. Mm-hmm. That might be surprising to some people, but just verbalizing, I feel so angry about this. And you see how I said that? Like I'm not screaming. I'm not throwing things. I'm not cussing anybody out. I'm just saying, I feel really angry about this. Sometimes that's enough to release that emotion because we've recognized it. We've honored it. And so when I say you have to, you know, that it's good for a relationship to be honest about your emotions, being able to express them. I mean, just like I express that. I don't mean in an inappropriate display, like,
right.
You're going to have to be okay with me throwing stuff at your head because that's what I do when I'm angry. That's not what I mean. It's never okay to be violent. But just to be, you know, if you're in a place where your emotions are not honored and respected by you or by someone else, then there's work to be done. And this is part of the work because, you know, nobody likes to be blamed. And the energy of blame is also a very low vibration of
Absolutely.
Energy. And I don't want to be in a relationship where someone's always feeling bad and then telling me I'm the one making them feel bad, right? Nobody wants that. So, but it's different when someone says to me, when you said this, I felt so sad or I felt so angry. Then we can talk about it. and figure out why. Because your emotions and how you feel are always connected to some value system you have.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Right? Always.
That value system drives the whole bus. There's no doubt about that. And by the way, when I described the stuttering process, it's not like I actually stutter it out. The way it actually works, and I can recall an incident with Louise earlier this week. She said something and it kind of triggered something in me. And I started to come out with something and I stopped. And probably the way it looked was my mouth open as my brain is working through all the different permutations to get to the final point. It probably took about 10, 15 seconds for me to work through them all. And she just sits there patiently waiting for me to do that. And then I finally got to the point where I could express it the way I needed to.
Fantastic, though. That's wonderful. Think about how often people will just let it fly without.
Oh, yeah.
Without that conscious awareness that you had to say, okay, I'm going to stop because otherwise I'm going to say something I don't really want to say. I'm going to say something that's not actually what I mean. So, and people are sometimes very uncomfortable with silence as the speaker or the hearer. Sometimes, you know, it's like radio silence.
Oh, yeah.
Not a good thing, right? So sometimes people are very uncomfortable with taking the time they need to actually process and figure out what they need to say, but it's always worth it.
I agree. It's totally worth it. And it's especially worth it in a relationship. I mean, I was talking about it's happening with Louise. Louise and I do this fairly frequently. I mean, we have a great relationship, but it's not like neither one of us ever have any unpleasant emotions going on because like anybody else we do, it's just we've learned how to process it without taking it out on the other person. And that's amazingly, it's an amazingly effective way to keep the relationship strong.
It's a necessary life skill for relationships. Absolutely.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah.
So even if you're not in a relationship, it's good to work on that.
Oh, well, it's, you are in a relationship because you're in a relationship with yourself.
True.
And you're in a relationship with your values and with the rest of the world. And so I actually encourage people to do this, even if they're by themselves. Mm-hmm. And say they're by themselves and they turn on the news or the radio and they hear about something and they have an emotion. It triggers an emotion. To speak it, you know, you turn on, you're driving in your car and you see an accident with an ambulance on the side of the road. See the face you made. Nobody likes to see that, right? It's like, oh my gosh, someone's gotten hurt. So identify that feeling and say it. You may be all alone in your car. Oh, I feel worried about those people. I feel sad when I see an ambulance. I feel scared for my own safety when I see car wrecks. Whatever it is that you feel, because in doing this, you're actually learning, you're training yourself to have a wider emotional vocabulary. Which is very, very useful because when you can identify how you feel and you know the word to identify it, then you can figure out what that's attached to, what your need is. Because remember, when we're feeling something that feels good or pleasurable or comfortable, it's always because we have a need that's being met. You know, if you're listening to our podcast and you're really enjoying what you're hearing, it's because one of your needs is to either be entertained or get more knowledge or, you know, hear voices, whatever. I mean, there's something that you need that you're getting right now. Mm-hmm. If you're enjoying it, if something's going on in your life and you don't feel comfortable and maybe you feel uncomfortable or you feel painful about it, then it's just that you have a need that's not being met. Think about when you haven't eaten and you start to feel grouchy or you have hunger pains or whatever. None of that feels comfortable. You just need food. You have a need that's not met. It's really simple. So all of those emotions are always attached to some need. And when your vocabulary for your emotions is wide, it makes it so much easier to figure out what it is, what it's attached to.
It also makes it easier to release it too, because that's ultimately what the purpose of that overexpressing thing is all about, isn't
right.
it? To be able to release it. I mean, we all want to learn how to release more resistance so we can get more of what we want. Well, that's how you do it. That's one big way to do it.
Yeah. It's a, like you said, I have a new process as a noun.
Yes.
But this is actually, it's the verb too. You are processing mm-hmm. that emotion when you make it bigger, when you recognize it, when you verbalize, I feel whatever. That's all part of processing it. And then it can, you can move past it in an easier way.
Josie's posting in our live stream. I wanted to share what she's talking about here and get some reaction from you. She says, in Gary Zukav's book, Seed of the Soul, he discussed how a major issue of being part of the army for him was trying to feel superior. And he then realized this macho way of being was an inauthentic power. And then she follows up by saying, journaling allows us to be honest with our emotions without being judged for it, don't you think?
Yeah, two things that I want to address that came up. It's a great book, by the way. If anybody wants a great book to read, it's been around a long time and it's very, very good. And if I recall correctly, it's a book that I think Oprah said gave her like such an aha moment that it changed her life in every way at the point that she read that book. It's really good. When you talk about feeling superior, that is not personal power. It's power over someone else, right? And that is how some people attempt to have some power, is to have power over other people or things.
Right.
And the part about that that makes it difficult is that means that power was attached to like his military career. And then if he retires and he's not active duty anymore, then that power is, some of it's waned, right? And then he doesn't feel as powerful because he doesn't have the level of power over other people. So all of the tips and things that I help people with around their personal power, none of it will ever be diminished because it's power that resides within you. It's not attached to a job or a title. And so it doesn't go away. When those things go away, no matter what's going on in your life, you can still have this level of personal power. And then journaling. Yes, yes, yes. I think I told this story before. It was so funny. About, oh gosh, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, I was facilitating a class for the staff of a very well-known kind of natural grocery store. The staff was being facilitated through a program that I did that had to do with the Artist's Way book. And one of the exercises in that book is journaling, but it's a particular method. It's called Morning Pages, and it's 3 pages written longhand.
Wow.
Every morning, pretty much before you do anything else. Some people like do it, you know, after their shower and after their breakfast and with their coffee. But I mean, it's at the beginning of the day. And it's just stream of consciousness. Like one of the instructions for Morning Pages is, if you can't think of anything to write, just write, I can't think of anything to write. I have Morning Pages that say, I need more coffee, it's freezing in the house. Well, you know, some of my Morning Pages are become a list of, this is what I have to do today, because it's sort of like a brain dump. It's just getting rid of all these thoughts that start to become cluttered. But another thing that happens in Morning Pages is processing emotions, being able, like you said, to process anger or frustration or sadness or fear or whatever it is with no one judging you, because it's just your journal and you're the only one in there, and just writing it out, letting it pour out, saying whatever you need to say. I've given assignments like that to coaching clients before. I had a coaching client, I remember about 8 or 9 years ago, that I said, you know, when's the last time you got angry? Oh, I don't get angry. I never get angry. I didn't think so. So this is your assignment for this week. I want you to just get angry. You can do it in a journal, is what I said. You don't have to go scream at anybody. I want you to just get a journal, and I want you to just figure that out and get as angry as you can in there. Just go ahead and let yourself do it. It turned out, you know, it took her 20 or 30 minutes, and it was a life-changing assignment. Why? Well, because, yes, we all have things we get angry about. And if we don't admit it, to at least to ourselves, and process it, it just hangs there, right? So yeah, I think journaling is a wonderful thing. And the funny part about that story is that we had 3 people facilitating maybe 12 employees. And one of the employees, two of the employees in the first 3 weeks, and they both said it was due to the morning pages, not to all the other stuff in the program. It was just everyone in there said, this journaling is so powerful. And two of them decided to quit their job. One of them decided to sell everything they owned and get a motorhome and take off across the country because
that's what
they had always wanted to do. And I was like, we're not going to be invited back to teach this for any other corporate group because everywhere we go and teach it, everyone quits their job.
Oh, that's funny. I'll tell you what, I don't know who was managing that particular company, but if it were me, I'd be grateful for that because I want people working for me who want to be working there, that's part of their DNA. This is something that's really important to them. I don't want somebody there who's just drawing a paycheck and they're not really happy. They really should be doing something else because they're just going to hold everybody else back. So yeah, send them on their way. I mean, wish them well and enjoy their retirement. You know, don't drive the motorhome crazy, but, you know, have a good time.
I tell you, it was such a great program that I was impressed that a company would pay for it to have their employees take it because it was so freeing and mm-hmm. liberating. And, you know, so the results of it were always really good. But I have to say, I'm in agreement with the participants. The program is great. The book, The Artist's Way, is a fantastic book. It's been around forever, but the morning pages are one thing that runs the whole course of the program, and it was really, really powerful. And any time in my own life where I start to get, I don't even know what the best words are to say, but maybe overwhelmed, confused, feel like I don't have real clarity about what my next steps are, I always have this, aha, yes, that's what I need to do. And I start journaling. And by the way, people that are listeners and subscribers from our podcast will know that months ago, I could not write or type because my thumb and my wrist were so messed up. And then it was about 65% better, all the way better.
Ooh.
I'm writing in a journal morning and evening. And
that's doubly impressive to me. And I'll tell you why. It's because I have done so little writing over the last 40 years that if I write, I do this now, I'm writing hashtags as we're going along. Two hashtags, my hand goes into a cramp. So I totally appreciate you being able to do all that journaling and your hand is doing well. That's fabulous.
Yeah. Well, and part of it was, you know, over in the Facebook room, I need to go post over there that you created for us to make vignettes.
Pivot counts.
I keep thinking about this for the past week. I need to go ahead and act it out because my vignette was that I was writing and that I spoke out loud to my husband. It feels so good to be able to write again. And that's all I kept imagining was that I was writing, I was free of pain, and that I said to him, oh, it feels so good to be able to write in my journal again without any kind of pain. And so, I don't think I've actually spoken that, but I do my journaling at the end of the day and he's always around while I'm doing it. So tonight I'll have to remember to speak out loud because I'm not having any problem with it whatsoever. So
that's so great to hear. Yeah. And it reinforces, I mean, that's something that falls into the category of what's called a chronic injury, and just chronic pain just keeps going and going and going until you do something about it. You did something about it, not surprisingly. And you got a wonderful result out of it. That's fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was really it, is that the two things, I did wear a brace for a while and it seemed to help until I took the brace off, and then it wasn't it really helping. Right. And it really, really was painful. I mean, I couldn't use it. I couldn't write. I couldn't knit. I couldn't do anything that I do with my hand. The pain was, it has a name. It's called de Quervain stenotendinitis. And it was my thumb and my wrist. And so two things that I did. One, I made that vignette mm-hmm. of myself saying, oh, it feels so good. Because I caught myself wondering one night. I wonder if this is going to heal. I wonder if this is going to be painful for me for the rest of my life.
Sure. That's an unusual thought. People would experience that one a lot, I think.
I wonder if it's going to get worse. And then I realized what I was doing.
Yeah.
Right? I was basically affirming my own uncertainty about it. Mm-hmm. And I decided, oh no, 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 no. I'm not going to wonder. I'm going to deem this, you know, temporary. It is going to get better. So actually three things. One thing is every day and every way I'm getting better and better. We were saying that to each other before the show, right?
Right.
Every day and every way. How are you doing? Well, better and better. Every
better
day
and better.
Better, getting better and better. The second thing was that I made that vignette of me saying, oh my gosh, it feels so good to not have any pain anymore. And the third thing was that I decided to frame the pain in my wrist as something pleasurable. Because mm-hmm. I said to myself, sensation is just sensation. We define that this hurts and that feels good. And I'm just going to decide that I like the way this feels.
Mm.
So every time I would feel the pain of it, I would decide in that moment that I liked it. I know that sounds
strange. Yeah.
But once I did that, it was probably 2 weeks where it was 99% gone.
Wow. Okay. So kind of a continuing of the theme that when you over-exaggerate, when you play it up, when you really bring it up to the surface and feel it, that makes it much easier to release it, to let go of it.
Hey, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but that's a good point, right? Because instead of me ignoring it or, you know, and I'm not telling anyone not to treat their injuries, right?
Sure.
I have plenty of nights where I put ice on my wrist. Mm-hmm. But at some point, I decided I was just going to like it. Yeah. Like Lawrence of Olivier with that match.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Doesn't that hurt? Well, sure it hurts. The idea is to not mind that it hurts.
Mm.
I decided I wasn't going to mind that it hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I have results. I have results, folks.
I had to tell you also, I forgot about this earlier when I was telling the story about my new process, but at one point about 30 to 45 seconds in, I was reaching for the next thing. What's the next thing? And the first thing that came to my mind was your old mantra. I feel rich. And let me tell you,
yeah.
It worked nicely. It worked beautifully.
I got to start that one up again. I was saying I feel rich like 1,000 times a day. And oh my gosh, the things that started happening. Seriously. It's like,
yeah.
Remember we went out to dinner that one night? We were like, I feel rich. And then the manager came over and was like, it's so good to see you guys. I got something for you. And he gave us a bottle of wine. And we said, thanks. Well, we're not going to open it tonight. And we were staying in the hotel there. We took it up to our room with us. And then my husband Googled it. And it was a $300 bottle of wine.
Whew.
It wasn't on their menu.
Whoa.
And then he freaked out because he's like, oh my God, I'm pretty sure it's not supposed to just be sitting over there on the table. I think it needs to be on its side. We need to put it in a refrigerator or something.
Oh, that's funny.
But I mean, we had things like that happen consistently. I don't know why I stopped. Why do we stop when something's working?
Well,
thank you for the reminder. I feel rich.
I don't know why we stop. I think I'm going to focus more on why I keep going because that's what I want to do tomorrow. I want to make sure I do day two. So
yeah.
Day two is coming up tomorrow and day three the following morning. And I'm just going to keep going and going and see how long I can go. Maybe I can do it endlessly.
Well, you will because it will become a habit. That's the mm-hmm. whole thing with forming good habits, new habits and habits.
And I can see this one being truly addictive. Because it really kicks the endorphins into gear in a big, big way. I mean, my body was swimming in them.
That's awesome.
By the way, there was also another side effect that I just realized happened. It didn't occur to me until we're talking about it right now. But I mentioned how I was doing this quietly because I didn't want to wake my wife up.
Well, I was going to ask you if you thought that was part of what made it successful.
Well, in a way, I'll tell you why. Because about 5 to 10 minutes later, I'm still experiencing the buzz, of course. And my wife comes in to the office and sits down, which she doesn't do very often. And we just start chatting. So I tell her, well, I just did this process this morning. She's smiling and she's getting into, you know, telling me about it from a therapeutic point of view because she used to be a psychotherapist. And of course, and she's the one who pointed out about the endorphins swimming around and all that kind of thing. And within moments, it turned into, let's do this on a regular basis where I come in here and we talk about good feeling stuff to start off the day. Now, I didn't really set the intention of let's get something going between the two of us. It just kind of happened organically, but it happened.
Well, energy entrains to itself, mm-hmm. which is why if we walk into a room and everyone in there is crying, you know, most of us are going to suddenly feel a wave of sorrow and, oh my gosh, what's going on? We feel compassion or whatever. Sure. When we walk into a room, everybody's excited. We feel the excitement, right? We're like, oh, what's going on in here? It feels like a party.
Right.
So that's helpful for relationships for us to have a high vibe.
No doubt.
Yeah. Awesome.
Speaking of high vibe relationships, we have a very high vibe relationship with our listeners. And I want to remind those who are not yet fully affirmed listeners who have listened every single day, we want to make you part of the party. And the way you do that is becoming a subscriber. By the way, becoming a subscriber is going to be really easy in coming months, coming weeks, coming days. What am I talking about? So if you're listening to this further down the line, you can just go right to the Play Store on an Android phone or to the App Store on an iPhone and look for LOA Today and you'll find our app there. But if you're listening to this fresh, we just published this and you're listening to this fresh in the next day or two, you can still subscribe. And once you've subscribed, you'll continue to get notifications about when we're putting the app out. And once the app is out, you'll know you can download it. But in the meantime, you're still getting the episodes. And that's simple enough to do. You just go to the homepage of the website, loatoday.net. But make sure you subscribe if you're not yet subscribed, as so many people have done, because there's nothing like getting that daily dose of happy. I mean, it's like doing the morning process without having to get up and go, yeah. You just kind of feel it because you're listening.
Yeah, I do that too, though.
Well, that's the other purpose too, right? Maybe some people who are listening are actually going to try that.
I'm going to try it. Yeah.
And I encourage everybody who feels like they would like to do it to try it and send me a note. Tell me what happened. I'm curious to know what other people's stories are going to be with this. And I'm going to keep going with it. But send me a note. My email is walt@loatoday.net. And tell me what's going on with it, because I mean, I think I'm kind of stumbled onto something here. It's going to be fun to see how it plays out.
I like it.
One thing that we've been focused so heavily on all this good feeling stuff. You talked about the power of kind of overextending when you're feeling angry or overextending when you're tending to repress an emotion. You want to bring the emotion out. But I also want to kind of look at that from a slightly different angle. We've talked a lot lately about how there's a lot going on. You mentioned the news, a lot going on in the news, really, really high intensity stuff. And even for somebody who is a high vibe person by preference, it's tough to, you know, keep that at bay, so to speak. So we're often trying to come up with different ways to keep it at bay. I guess what I want to ask you is, the processes we talked about today, are there any that are favorites for you if you're trying to keep something at bay? What would you endorse the most in terms of maybe what your own processes are?
Well, I don't generally try to keep things at bay. I know that my emotions are giving me information. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's just that, okay, yeah, I will say there have been times when I've said, okay, I got to put my phone down. I can't read the news anymore right now because I'm really feeling frustrated about what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. And I need to just chill out and let my brain work on solutions, right? And how I can, you know, take action in a positive way. So for me, it would be that it's moving my body, really, like going for a walk. Putting the phone down, but it's not that, oh, you know, I've just felt something that was uncomfortable and I don't want to feel that.
Right.
That's really not my jam, because what I'd rather do is channel that energy into something positive and productive that's going to actually have an effect on whatever the situation was that caused me, right, to have a response of feeling frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I say that not just in world events, but it can be in small events or relational things as well. Often that's where we see it the most.
Sure.
And so I think taking the time, like we talked about, to process something, to actually think about it and recognize, like, what do I need that I'm not getting that's causing this emotion or feeling to come up? And remembering that it's not anybody else's responsibility to meet my needs. It's my own responsibility. So then figuring out, you know, so how do I get that thing that I need? How do I make this change? How do I contribute to positive change if it's a big global thing? Or, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I still think it's really important for all of us right now to remember that we have a sphere of control, a sphere of influence, a sphere of concern. And if you think of three circles that are concentric. The first one, my sphere of control, it's everything I actually have control over, like my home environment, what I say on the podcast, how I interact with people, how I dress, how much glitter I wear. You know, I'm in control of all of that. That's in my sphere of control, how I treat people, what my own philosophies are. Then there's a sphere of influence. And that's when it starts things that affect other people. But then there's the sphere of concern. It's like right now, the sphere of concern is like the whole globe. Mm-hmm. It's like there's COVID-19. We've got, you know, racial inequality and people being murdered in the streets and all these things. Yeah, that's a heavy thing. Mm-hmm. Am I concerned? Well, hell yes, I'm concerned. Do I have control, direct control over it right now? Not really. But by focusing on what I do have control over, then my sphere of influence will grow. And when my sphere of influence starts to grow, then it actually starts to touch those concerns. Yeah. I have control over who I vote for. I have control over where I give my money. I have control over those things. If we just put our sphere of concern front and center and we have all our focus going on, we're watching the news 24/7, we're thinking about all of these big global things, and yet we're not putting any energy and focus on things we actually have control over, then our sphere of influence shrinks.
Right.
And like we've been talking about all week, all month, personal power, our personal power shrinks, our influence shrinks. We don't want to do that. So what do we have control over? And that's what happens to me when I feel frustrated about a situation. I figure out, okay, how am I contributing to this situation? Whether it's me and my husband, whether it's me and my friends, whether it's you and I, whether it's global and huge in scope, how am I contributing to the thing that I see as a problem? And what can I do within my own sphere of control to make some kind of small difference? That's the best tool I have right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big deal. It also occurs to me, that's an answer to the question, well, how do I help out a partner who is so negative on all this stuff? Well, you have your sphere of influence, and you do it by going back to controlling your personal power.
Yes, absolutely. You stand in your own personal power. You cultivate your own personal power. I think I'm up to video number 7 now. I thought about this today. I was like, I got to write all these things down. So I have a list, right? Like an actual functioning list of, and then we can talk about it on the podcast. You know, these are all the things that we can do to cultivate our own personal power. Then we will have some influence over the people around us, not influence with, power with. It's never over. We don't want to have... Right. We don't have control over them. We don't have power over them. We want to have influence with them. And influence is a two-way street. In order for me to have influence with you, I have to be willing for you to influence me. Yeah. Like it's a two-way street. It's never one way. One way is control over. And I'm not interested in that.
No.
That doesn't cultivate my personal power.
It's not even fun. No. I mean, perfectly blunt. It really, there's nothing
for,
fun about
for anyone.
No, it's actually pretty blah. A funny thing happens too. The more that we stick with our personal power, that's when we get these weird synchronicity type events where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, that person that we were trying to influence, but we really didn't know what to do, so we went to our own personal power, just suddenly blurts out something completely new that they had never blurted out before. And we say, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Without realizing that we were the model, we were the influence. Just because of who we are and how we vibrate and what we focus on, we provide influence, and we didn't even know we were doing it.
Correct.
Which is fun.
Takes time.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. So good stuff. All right. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? We started before the show, we said to ourselves, what's our topic? And we said, we don't know what our topic is. We'll just come up with something. So I decided to tell my little story. And just like you said, it just emerged from there. The whole thing turned into
follow the energy. That's what
into a really good show on the value and virtue of going for it, just going for, you know, getting that energy out, whether you call it positive or negative, just getting it out.
Yeah, it's all just energy. And there is no good energy or bad energy. It's just energy.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So thank you very much once again, Cindy. As usual, your valued counsel is valued.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, listeners. We appreciate you as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.